Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da. Tag und Nacht. In ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Here we go. Bada bing, bada boom, Mr. Worldwide, when I walk in the room, it's a Monday, baby, but that's your new, and tonight is just me and you. Baby, tonight, DJ's got us Monday in love again. Baby, tonight, DJ's got us Monday in love again. Gonna Monday in love. Oh, so mini-sode, like it's the last Monday of your life. Life gon' get you right. Hi, everyone. Those are the lyrics
maybe
to that song.
Maybe that's my favorite one you've ever done, ever. Maybe you should just start doing, like, a Chang-like style from Community. Like, just put in the word Monday in, like, just random words. Do you know what I mean?
Those are the lyrics in the song.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, how long has it been since you've listened to that song?
Honestly, many, many, many years. I'm deeply mistaken.
Maybe that is how this trend continues. So I had a full Monday song prepared. And then about a minute before we started recording, I thought to myself, I've definitely already done this song.
Oh, no.
And I didn't want to take the time to find another one. But it is getting harder and harder. It is slim pickings out here at this point. So maybe we take the trend out back behind the barn and kill it, or maybe I just start, like you said, doing a Chang. Maybe we Chang the trend.
Yes.
Stop using your word for other words. It's always just the word change. It's not that clever.
I had a panic attack, as I do. And I watched, like, my favorite line from every Community episode. Like, I watched, like, 3 of those last night, and it made me feel instantly better. And just, oh my gosh, making me laugh. Community is my fave.
I love that show.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. My name is Anorar, and I'm a Glick.
Hello, everybody. My name is Anorar, and I'm a mini-link.
I did, and I was at my New York City improv class this week.
That's the thing that's going to make you famous, is your New York City improv.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Got my foot in the door. Here we go. Absolutely. Lauren Michaels, where are you at?
Seriously.
He's banging down my door right now.
He's like, where's that all red kid? I need him.
He's like, Ian, open up.
He's like, we just finished a season. It's time for auditions for the next one. Let's go.
You're the next Pete Davidson. We got a vacancy.
Seriously.
You have the exact same vibe as Pete Davidson.
Seriously? It's uncanny. It's uncanny.
Your whole thing is how you're a huge stoner. Ian, come on.
And you like live in Staten Island with your mom. Classic you.
Uh-huh. But we did an exercise where we were just supposed to talk about they gave us a topic, and it was like, talk honestly about this. Like, don't be funny, don't be a character, like literally talk as yourself about this topic. And then they would shout out different like characters, for lack of a better term, and then you would continue to have the conversation as yourself, but like you would change your mannerisms and your body and all that stuff. So, you know, like we were talking and they said like squirrels, and so then we were like, you guys, improv is so weird. It's a bunch of full adults. I am on the younger side of this class, just like pretending to be 5 years old. So we're like running around the stage, freaking talking about dating. But like, our voices are up here. And one of them was aliens. This is such a roundabout way to get to this topic. Just the way we were talking reminded me. And so I talked like this the whole time. And it was all about all of my dating trauma and why I don't date anymore and why I'm in therapy. But I was talking like that the whole time.
Like you said all those words.
Oh, yeah. No, there's literally one point where I was like, wow, this is a lot of personal information for me to be dumping on this class.
I honestly love that. That's why improvers like love each other so much, is because they do stuff like that and share all their trauma while pretending to be an alien.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's honestly fun.
Honestly, it was one of my favorite exercises that we've done. It was a good time.
That's cool. I'm excited. I'm excited for you. I hope you become famous from your improv classes.
Well, Lauren's here.
Seriously.
He says Kate and Adie left. Come on.
Did Kyle Mooney leave too?
I think Kyle did leave too, yeah.
I like Kyle Mooney.
Kate joined that show when I was in high school.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Adie joined when I was in high school in like 2015.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because Kate only joined the season before, mm-hmm. like Adie and Cecily mm-hmm. and... Mm-hmm. I mean, Keenan joined when I was in middle school, but I've given up on him ever leaving that show. Yeah. I don't want him to, let it be clear, I think he's very funny. But like, Keenan will be on that show until the sun burns out. Like, he's there to stay.
There is a new cast member of this year that is like maybe my favorite cast member that's ever been a cast member. Sarah Squirm.
I love her.
Seriously, we should go to one of her shows. I am obsessed with her. Everything she does, I'm like, yep, yep, yep. This is it. Uh-huh.
No, she is so, so funny.
So funny. I love her. Oh my gosh. SNL. Are you ready to get in this minisode?
Heck yeah, I am, Diva.
Oh, Diva. Oh my gosh. I can't believe this is about Diva. It feels like it's been a million years since I've seen you. And a million years mm-hmm. since we've touched the podcast, even though we recorded like 6 hours of podcast content this week on High School Musical alone. But it feels like it's been so long since we've touched Diva specifically as well.
I thought you were going to say since we've touched divas. And I was like, that sounds like a euphemism for genitalia. Yeah. Well, I don't like that.
Yeah. I call my vagina my diva. That's funny. I should. Anyway. But it feels like it's been a minute since we've talked about Diva. So I'm excited to get into this. Let's kick things off with Alana.
All right. Hello, my fellow divas. Alana, please do not refer to us as genitalia. That's really disrespectful. Yeah, that's,
honestly, I'm a human person. I'm more than my genitals.
I've been saying that since the day I was born.
That's just one part of me.
I am multifaceted. I am arms and legs. I am nose and mouth. I am not just genitalia. I am more than my diva. All right. So
I am more than my diva.
I'll do a little editing. Alana says, "Hello, my fellow multifaceted humans that are more than just one part of them. I'm writing to inform you of the cultural impact that Nutbush City Limits has in Australia. In Australia, if the song starts playing, nearly everyone will get on their feet and dance. Not just any dance. For some reason, we've created our own dance to go with Nutbush, and every Australian knows it. Some people get the steps wrong for the first couple rounds, but eventually everyone will move in perfect synchronicity. It's not a school dance or a wedding until this song is played. I compare it to maybe the YMCA or the Macarena. Anyway, hope you both are having a fabulous Diva Day. Consensual forehead kisses, Diva Alana." The tone of this whole email has shifted dramatically for coming in immediately after us saying that Diva sounded like a euphemism. So Alana, I just want to apologize for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're not calling me, genitalia.
Yeah, I know you're not telling us to have a vagina day. I'm aware.
I would love to have a vagina day. That honestly sounds like it maybe be a good day.
Yeah, true.
But interestingly enough, I didn't know this at all, but we got a bunch of messages about this. And I think that is so interesting. Everyone is like, you guys, Australia loves Nutbush City Limits so much. This is so crazy, you know? Like, mm-hmm. have you watched the video? I would do the fun of this dance. It looks so fun.
This reminds me of in Dairy Girls.
Yeah.
When they go to Gaul. I don't remember what event it is. I think it's a wedding. And they do Rock the Boat. and everyone like sits on the ground and does that like rowing dance. Yeah. Like mm-hmm, rock the mm-hmm, boat, don't mm-hmm. rock the boat, baby. And they're, like, I think it's that song.
In each other's legs, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone, like every American online was like, what the heck is this thing in Dairy Girls? Like, did they make it up for the show? Mm-hmm. And then every Irish person was like, do you guys not do Rock the Boat over there?
Honestly, I went through a phase in high school, like my senior year, where I was like, I don't do line dances anymore. You can't make me. I was like, I'm too old to do line dances. And then I like got a little older and wiser. And I was like, no, line dances are the best. Things mm-hmm. like this are the best because it like gets everybody out onto the floor. It like creates a sense of unity immediately. And it's so freaking fun.
Yeah, there's no like sense of self-consciousness because you are worried about like how you look or mm-hmm. what move to do next or whatever. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just jamming out to Ike and Tina.
Totally. Absolutely. I love that. If I ever go to Australia, we're going to do this dance.
Heck yeah.
Because you're coming to Australia with me, I guess.
Obviously. You cannot go to Australia without me. I cannot go to Australia without you. It's an unspoken agreement.
Actually, it's unspoken, but we actually put it in writing a couple of years ago. We just don't talk about it very much.
There's a difference between a written agreement and a spoken agreement. Yeah. It is unspoken, but it is written.
And then we have spoken and unwritten agreements.
Yes.
And then we're
like, don't you dare write this down, but I'm speaking right now. Yes.
There's different levels. And then there's spoken and written. And then mm-hmm. there's unspoken, unwritten rules.
The unspoken, unwritten agreements are my favorite. They are wild. Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't know what they are, listeners, because we cannot speak them and we cannot write them.
And randomly, we have a ton.
Yeah, we've like, we kind of have to charades them to each other.
But we have to get written unspoken permission to charade those things to each other. It's a whole clause. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
If you could see our business meetings.
Our lawyers are, they've had it up to here with us. They're over it.
But it's important to me. I love that. Diva Alana, thank you so much. Thank you so much for this message. Everyone from Australia, I hope you danced in that bush to the limits soon. This dance looks fun as fuck. Up next, we have a message from Suzanne.
Good evening, Ian and LPC. It's me again, Suzanne, she, her, 42. I spent a lot of time, years literally, trying to understand why Finn kissed Emma at the end of this episode. In reality, it probably happened because Glee writers are stupid and the only trick they know to create drama is having somebody kiss someone they shouldn't. But in the world of the show, it makes me think about Finn. Finn was raised by a single mom who lost her spouse to an overdose, who we see on the show struggle to make ends meet and who made some poor romantic choices. Spray paint yard guy. From a young age, Finn would have been very subject to parentification. Here is an article I'm including for reference on parentification. From this article, quote, parentification can involve a range of behaviors from the overt, making children engage in physical tasks that typically fall to adults in the family, including tasks such as cooking and cleaning, caring for siblings, or caring for the parent themselves, to the subtler, confiding in a child in a manner that is not age appropriate, seeking emotional support from a child, expecting tasks of a child beyond their developmental capacity, seeking advice from children, using them as mediators or buffers, and involving them in family conflicts. Because of the circumstances around Finn's dad's death and the hints we see about Carol and Finn's life before Bert and Kurt came along, I can see several of these factors affecting Finn. In particular, and this is where we eventually connect back to Emma, seeking emotional support from a child. If Finn grew up frequently needing to comfort his mother rather than being comforted by her, that would have affected his emotional development. Now you put him in a situation with a woman who is an authority figure to him and who he cares about, and she is panicking and crying. I can see the little boy in Finn coming out and saying, "Shh, mama, shh, don't cry," and wanting to offer affection as comfort and as a distraction. I don't believe 19-year-old Finn wanted to make out with Emma. I think Finn's inner 5-year-old wanted Miss Pillsbury to stop crying. Other things Finn does in the show, making Mr. Schuster a father figure, lashing out, etc., could all be explained by early parentification. Finn lacks emotional boundaries, kicking garbage cans and yelling. Even some of Finn's
positive traits, like being a leader or showing wisdom in certain situations, can also come from being parentified at an early age. Love to you both, Suzanne in Pennsylvania.
I'm Lena in Pennsylvania right now.
That's true.
I honestly really like this perspective, and I think it fits with everything we know about Finn. And I think that it makes more sense with what we saw, with there being no like romantic hints. Is it still wildly inappropriate? Absolutely. But like, it would make sense that like, maybe he didn't really know what to do and he just wanted this like, authoritative figure in his life to stop crying. And it's been his job for a long time to like comfort people that it's not his job to comfort. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think this is a cool way of, this is a cool and interesting way of looking at it. Obviously, this is all in the context of it was inappropriate of him to kiss her, but I think that that all fits in. So I like this thought a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. This is all in the context of this is not made clear in the show, and who knows what the writer's intentions were.
Yeah.
But I agree, this makes a ton of sense and makes so much more sense than Finn like having romantic feelings that have never been suggested before and don't really ever get touched on again.
Seriously.
It just kind of comes out of nowhere. And I especially like, yes, in this episode, it makes this scene make more sense and feel less like, so what's happening now? But I also like that, like you said, it kind of ties into Finn overall and how Finn just like always takes charge and takes on these leadership roles, and how he's lashing out all the time, and how he is just like, you know, always connecting with these adult authority figures. I agree with you. I think there are a lot of hints, whether it was intentional or not, that, you know, Carol, she's a great mom. She did a good job, but you know, she was in dire straits for a little bit. Definitely. And maybe didn't have the healthiest emotional boundaries with her son when he was in his like developmental years.
Absolutely. And that happens. And, you know, and I think we even see that in season one, to bring it back, that like Finn was really like all about being the man of the house, you know, and like when Bert was coming in, Bert was going to be the new man of the house. And he was very like, you know, like he held that role in very high regard. Yeah. And I think like that is another big hint that this could be absolutely a thing.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for this message. Neighbor, I'm in PA, Tim. up next, we have a message from Grace.
Hi, Ian and LPC. It's Grace, she, they. I just listened to your Diva episode, and I'm trying to explore what you said about comparing the Blaine and Tina story to the Finn and Kurt story. Before I begin, I think you owe us the Tina jingle, since the writers did her so wrong with the VapoRub plot.
Tina, they did you so wrong, Tina, Cohen Chang.
First, what you said about the perspective is only partially true. Although Finn is definitely the primary character in season one, I do think we're meant to see some of this from Kurt's perspective, since we do get Kurt's voiceovers about why he likes Finn. That being said, the scene itself is from Finn's perspective. If anything, the perspective is more balanced between Finn and Kurt than it is between Blaine and Tina. Second, although Kurt never sexually assaults Finn, he does go to further lengths than Tina in literally every other situation. If Tina never did the VapoRub, all she's done is sing a love song, ask Blaine to Sadie Hawkins, and then try and ask for a sexless relationship out of loneliness. If the writers didn't hate Tina / Jenna Ushkowitz / every woman on this show, and the VapoRub scene didn't happen, that's generally a very normal teenage way to try and get a boyfriend. However, Kurt tries to manipulate Finn into being gay using Quinn's pregnancy. I know those aren't the best terms, but I can't think of a better way to word it. And goes so far as to set Bert and Carol up to try and get closer to Finn. He also seems to want to take advantage of Finn moving in with him to share a room, although that situation is unclear. Do Kurt and Bert live in a one-bedroom house? Who knows? I certainly don't. But I always thought they had another bedroom and Kurt just wanted to have the whole basement. Because if Bert and Kurt's mom really let their baby's nursery be in the basement, I'm sorry, I love you, Bert, but you suck. So while I won't deny the vapor rub scene did happen, without it, Kurt goes much further than Tina. Third, I think the image of a man being predatory towards someone rubs us differently than a woman, even if the recipient is another man. One, because a lot of sexual assault slash abuse slash harassment is portrayed in media or in the news as done by a man. And two, because the Kurt Finn storyline encourages the predatory gay stereotype, which sucks. And fourth, I think the Kurt Finn storyline is portrayed as Kurt actively trying to turn Finn gay, whereas in the Blaine-Tina storyline, Tina is very aware that Blaine is gay. I think Tina is hoping that she'll be the exception to Blaine's sexuality rather than hoping she can turn him. Additionally, since Tina did witness Blaine and Rachel make out and blame it on the alcohol, her subconscious is probably using that as proof that Blaine can be with a girl in some capacity. I love your podcast, and no matter how much I hate Glee, I look forward to it every week. I hope you guys are doing well, and I'm so happy for you two being in New York. Consensual forehead kisses, Grace. P.S. I finally listened to Spring Awakening and watched the HBO documentary, and I have to say, my love of Jonathan Groff grew exponentially after hearing his story. I saw a YouTube video of him reenacting the time he forgot all the lyrics to Left Behind. So if you want to slash have time in the episode, do you have any funny stories like that? If you got a quick lyric flub, I've never straight up forgotten the lyric. Oh, no, that's such a lie. And yeah, it's actually embarrassing.
I forget lyrics all the time. It happens all the time that like it's not even like funny to me anymore because it's mortifying every time. But one time I remember we did a lot of like competing in high school with like musical theater songs. And this was I competed all 3 years in the musical theater category. And I did the first year I did, "So Anyway, I'm Leaving. I Thought You'd Like to Know. Your Faithful Come With Me," from Next to Normal, which is super random to do that song from Next to Normal, but I don't know what I was thinking, frankly. And I forgot the lyrics so bad that I just went, "We clearly can't stay. We both," and I just went and sat down.
No.
Well, I was like, and it was like during a round. So I was like, well, what the fuck? Like, I'm not going to, like, what would I do? So I went and sat down. I was like, thank you. It was really funny. Honestly, I forget stuff all the time. I don't know.
I don't know if I've ever like been on stage in a show and just like no words are coming. If that has ever happened, I've blocked it out.
I remember one time when we were in 42nd Street, I had to say that we had Billy Lawler in the show and I fully forgot the name Billy Lawler. So I literally almost said Ian. I was like, we have Ian. Billy Lawler, like it like took me, I needed to like take a breath before I could say it. I don't know. I forget shit all the time. I've got a dreadful memory for an actor.
The time that I like fully went up on lyrics was in class. It was a few weeks ago. It was like a musical theater class that I was taking. And it was embarrassing because it was like a new teacher that week who, you know, I didn't have goodwill with because they had never seen me perform before. So they didn't know that like this is not out of the ordinary for me. I mean, that this is out of the ordinary for me. And I had spent literally like 6 hours going over this song because it was just like so complicated, like rhythmically and melodically and lyrically. I had spent hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, like more time than I've ever spent just working on the text of a song to try and get it down. And then I went into class, I sang the first half, I sing through the bridge, and then after the bridge, I completely go up on my lyrics. Oof. And it's like a class setting. Yeah. So it's like a little chiller.
Definitely.
And so I just turned to the accompanist and I was like, "I'm so sorry, what's that lyric?" And he was like, "Oh, it's this." And I said, "Oh, thank you so much. Can we just go from that part again?" And I get like to the end of that verse, and then I forget the next lyric to the beginning of the next verse. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly starts to come more and more frequently, where by the end of the song, after every individual lyric, I would have to turn to the accompanist and he would have to tell me what it was. And then I would sing it. And it was so embarrassing. It was so, 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 so
bad.
At
that point, they should have let you like hold a paper.
I know. I was like, I'm not even acting at this point. Because like, I am, what are you learning? so panicked about that. And then, you know, I finished the song and then they just had me work the first half of it where I like knew all the words.
Yeah.
But it was a bloodbath.
Totally.
But the one, that story is not really like funny. It just kind of sucked.
Yeah.
The one that is funny is in Friends, Monica and Chandler have a duet in Act Two where, spoilers for Friends, like the musical and the show, where Chandler proposes to her because they end up getting married in the show, if you didn't know that.
Can't believe you spoiled it for me.
Shoot. And I have a lyric. I sing about how Monica makes me so happy and like we're so perfect for each other. We love each other so much. And then I sing, and I'll spend the rest of my life making you feel the same way too. And I, for some reason, one night got to that lyric. And this wasn't even like opening. This is like a month and a half into us doing this show. Because it was last week, actually, that this happened. And I sang, I'll spend the rest of my life. And then my mind went blank. And I just was scrambling for two syllable words. And I said, trying, which changing making you feel the same way to trying to feel the same way to drastically changes the meaning of that song. So instead of the song being like, you make me so happy and I love you so much and I'm going to dedicate myself to making you just as happy as you make me, it turned into like, I get the vibe that you're really into me and you know what? I'm going to try my darndest to be into you as well.
Like, all right. And that's so funny.
I like, you know, think only the eagle-eyed listeners heard it.
Definitely.
But it caught me so off guard by like how drastically that lyric just changed the mood of the song.
Yeah.
That I then was having a hard time keeping a straight face for the rest of that entire song.
That's so funny.
Ba-da-ba-ba-bow.
Honestly, pretty funny. Honestly, lyric flubbing to me has never been super funny. It's always been so mortifying. Jonathan Groff has a way better attitude about it. He's so funny. Oh my God. But Grace, let's talk about this message for just a second.
I think these are all very good points. I think, you know, it's a complicated issue. I think there's a lot of factors as to these two plots and the different ways that they're portrayed by the writers. I do agree that the Kurt and Finn plot, from a writing perspective, is portrayed as creepier.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Whereas
this plot, from a writing perspective, is portrayed as like,
it's much sweeter. More, yeah, it's like, this girl is so like, sad. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I just think there's not one clear answer as to why these two plots have such a different feel to them and why we as an audience react differently.
Definitely.
And I think part of it could be internalized homophobia, and I think part of it could be what you were talking about, Grace, where, like, you know, Kurt was trying to arrange a marriage between their parents, which is like pretty weird, whereas Tina was just like, will you go to a dance with me, besides this very clear awful scene that happens in this episode.
And frankly, I think it's both. I think both things are true in this situation, and I think that the Glee writers are just like, have their own prejudices that they, you know, write into stories, and they are not good at hot button issues. And that's just the truth.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know. It's definitely something I think is worth comparing, and I think is something worth noting. And I think it's something worth thinking about, like, what are the writers trying to say? And I think that's something we can keep thinking about for sure. But Grace, thank you so much for this message. I super appreciate it. Up next, we have a message from Emily.
Content warning, mentions of sexual assault. Hey guys, it's Emily Sheher from London.
International listener!
So I really love this episode. Obvious sore thumbs aside, it's so much fun. All the songs are bangers, and I've got pretty much all of them on my Gleek playlist, so this is definitely one of my most rewatched episodes of this season. Like you guys, I have really complicated feelings about the Tina Blaine plot in this episode. I feel like the positive stuff is really positive, and the negative stuff is really negative. I always have to skip that scene with Tina and Blaine because it makes me so uncomfortable. Possibly the worst thing about it for me is the fact that by this point on the show, Darren Criss had been sexually assaulted multiple times by fans. He has spoken quite openly about incidents involving fans kissing him on the lips without consent at stage doors, with one fan even licking his face. There were also incidents on the Glee tour where he was groped or kissed by members of the audience. On one occasion, he was even grabbed and pulled off stage into the front row by an audience member. And instead of calling this kind of behavior out, Glee includes a scene that romanticizes and almost encourages these people's actions. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like Tina is supposed to represent these fans in this situation. This isn't an isolated event either. There are several moments throughout the show where Blaine is objectified or sexualized as a joke, and after learning about how he feels about the Men of McKinley Pictures last week, it makes me feel really sorry for Darren Criss. Also, the fact that the writers have Tina do this to Blaine without his knowledge, and then go on to have Blaine tell Tina she's the closest person he has in his life right now, makes me really sad. Because it just goes to show how vulnerable he was when this happened. This whole thing just makes me feel icky. To end on a positive note, though, I really love the core of Tina and Blaine's relationship in this episode, and I think they have some really beautiful and well-acted moments of dialogue. I love how they bond over them both being lonely, and I think this really lays the foundation for a really strong friendship going forward. I especially love the conversation at the lockers where they talk about Asian divas. It's sad how refreshing it is to have the two characters of Asian descent talk positively about having Asian role models without there being some horrible joke forced in, but here we are. I also love how Blaine continues to prove his point and includes a male Asian diva that he looks up to as well. Ugh, this show is such a rollercoaster of ethics and morals, and my feelings are so complicated and conflicted with every episode, but I'm so thankful to hear you guys unpack those same feelings every week. As always, I loved your episode and can't wait for next week. Lots of love, Emily. P.S. I work front of house at Les Mis on the West End, and so I feel like I'm qualified to confirm that Valjean is definitely not a diva. Madame Trenardier, Enjolras, and all the lovely ladies definitely are, though.
I love that. Definitely not a diva. I so genuinely appreciate this message. I think Darren Criss has such an interesting relationship with the, or not relationship, I would even say, but like the, Darren Criss and like the fans who do this to him, like, and how frequently this happened, and like, it's like happening to him, and like happening, I don't know. I literally don't even know how to put this into words, but it makes me sick to my stomach. Mm-hmm. And it is like, I totally didn't even think of it as like a parallel that the writers were drawing, but I think that absolutely could be the case because heaven knows these writers love to like put the actual like actors' struggles into things. Like this is, absolutely like sickening and disgusting and all of that. It's just, I don't like that's, it feels insidious that they would do that. And I really don't like thinking about that, but I am nervous that's true. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just awful.
Yeah. Fans are crazy, baby. I don't even know. I know. Like, it's just so gross the way that people think that they, because like this person is a public figure, they have a right
to
like
access to their,
like their privacy, and that the person should not have any boundaries. It's so disgusting.
Absolutely.
And yeah, that is kind of how Tina feels about Blaine, that she's like, because I love this person so much, I should have like, I should have access to him. Mm-hmm. And how dare he not want to go to a dance with me? And how dare he, you know, not pay attention to me? And how dare he not let me rub him down shirtless? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's some gross behavior.
I know. One thing that I think that is really interesting about this episode is how much we all still love this episode. Because the episode is just so good. And I think that is just such a testament. Like, Diva, to me, this episode is a quintessential Glee episode because it is, has two sexual assaults in it. And it is like one of the best episodes of this entire season, yeah. Let alone maybe even the show. Like that, and like, that's just Glee. And that's just Glee. And sometimes, mm-hmm. like, in order to enjoy Glee, you have to kind of either like skip through that, the, you know, the two sore thumbs in the app, or you just kind of have to like take it as it comes. And it's like, God, what the fuck? How did we do this? Oh man. I also love what you said about Tina and Blaine discussing like Asian divas. Like, I think that's something that we forget sometimes is that Darren Criss is Asian. And I like you saying that, oh my gosh, like that's so special and awesome. And I'm really glad that they got to have that scene. So classically.
Yeah.
I really appreciate this message, Emily. Thank you for sending it. Have fun at Les Mis. Say hi to Madame Thénardier for me. Up next, we have a message from Elizabeth.
Hey, NNLPC, it's Elizabeth. How are my favorite divas? Elizabeth, what did you just call us?
Yeah, what the disgusting. Heck, Elizabeth? I am more than my diva.
And Lorne Michaels, that's what we call a callback. I'll see you in September for filming. I keep trying to come up with clever ways to introduce myself, but I also feel like I shouldn't introduce myself because that seems silly because we're friends, right?
Mm-hmm. We are.
Anyway, I've just made this super awkward, and I'm just going to jump into my thoughts. This is Ian speaking, I just really quick want to say, after we just went on that tangent about, like, people feel like they have rights to public figures, privacy, and whatever, I hope that those of you who say stuff like this, who say, like, oh, you're my best friends, don't think we're talking about you.
No, we're not. That's absolutely not even, even a similar case. That's fully different.
If you were, like, you know, following us home and trying to like find out where we live, then maybe we can have a conversation.
Yeah.
But you guys saying that like we're your best friends does not sketch us out. Please don't worry
about
that. Frankly,
I love that.
All right, back to Elizabeth. I'm really glad that you brought up the parallel of Kurt's behavior with Finn and Tina's behavior with Blaine and your views on it. I'm glad you acknowledge the possibility that there might be some internalized homophobia to consider, because this is something that I have always thought in terms of the difference of how these two situations were portrayed and how they are viewed by the general population. Before I continue, I do want to state that I do acknowledge the issue of perpetuating the predatory gay trope, and I understand being upset with that, so I am not talking about those feelings on the matter. I also agree with a lot of what both of you said on the matter, so I don't want to repeat what you already said. However, when I watched the show originally, a lot of the criticism for Kurt that I saw was mostly angry straight people calling Kurt a creep, and this always felt wrong to me. I grew up in the sitcom era of Nick and Disney of the late 90s and early 2000s. Pretty much every single comedy I watched growing up would have a plot about the main female character having a crush and coming up with some crazy scheme to get close to them, and would be super over the top with their behavior to them, and it's always portrayed and perceived as cute, funny, sad, desperate, but never creepy. Why is that? I do honestly feel like misogyny and homophobia are big players in it. I do think at the time of airing, the fans did at least interpret Tina's behavior as inappropriate, but obviously, at this point, the writers didn't. And Tina didn't receive the same level of criticism as Kurt did, and I have only really seen this VapoRub scene being spoken about as an assault only since the resurgence of Glee in the last few years. I'm not really saying Tina should have gotten the same level of criticism as Kurt, but I do think the differences in how society perceived these situations is a discussion worth having. I do really love this episode and Tina for all the reasons you said. I like what they're doing with her, and I want them to dive into more of it, but I do think that this episode for Tina is a bit of Props 2.0, an episode where they acknowledge everything fans are saying they want for Tina and how poorly they are treating her, but then go on to continue to mistreat her and cast her aside, and that is just stinky. Anyway, that's all for now. So much love and consensual forehead kisses. Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, I love this message, and I think it is definitely, you're so right. It's a conversation worth having. And I think it's a conversation worth even like everyone just thinking about how they are responding to these episodes and what the difference is and what is the writer's fault and what's kind of like things we need to work through in our head. You know, like, is some of it internalized homophobia? I think so. And is a lot of it the writers being terrible people? I think so. So I think all these things are true. I also, yeah, I remember when, like, the episode came out with Kurt, like, the people who were angry about it were mostly, like, people who were scared of gay people and people who were scared of queer people. And it was, you know, straight people being like, queer people are predators. And that is absolutely so harmful and awful. And that trope is scary and damaging. But I don't, yeah, all these things, this is all so complicated and so crazy, and Glee is so shitty.
And I think a big part of it does have to do with how each situation is framed.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Not to talk about How I Met Your Mother. I was trying
You'd love to talk about How I Met Your Mother.
There's an episode in How I Met Your Mother where they talk about a graph that they call, what is the name of that guy in Say Anything?
John Cusack.
Yes, but his character name specifically. Oh. Lloyd Dobler. Okay, I'm thinking of the right thing. There's an episode in How I Met Your Mother where they talk about the Dobler-Dahmer theory, which is about Lloyd Dobler and Jeffrey Dahmer. Which, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer's a very famous serial killer. Lloyd Dobler is the lead in Say Anything. Mm-hmm. And the most famous scene in Say Anything is Lloyd Dobler goes outside the girl's house that he likes.
Mm-hmm. The light, the heat. I am complete.
And he plays on a boombox. He plays that song outside her bedroom window at night. And in How I Met Your Mother, they talk about how that scene is only romantic because we as an audience like Lloyd.
Yeah.
But like, if we didn't like Lloyd, that's a serial killer move. So it talks about how a lot of romantic gestures fall on the Dobler-Dahmer scale, where if you're someone that like, the person doesn't like, it's creepy and serial killer. But if you're someone they do like and you do the literal exact same thing, it's romantic. And that's not a perfect analogy for what's happening here.
But it's a good one. But it is a good one. And I think it's something to note that's like, do you like this person? Is this person attractive? Is this a character you care about? Is this something that you like? Yeah, I think that's totally a good thing to bring up.
The writers are writing Tina as a very, like, they want us to be on her side in all of this and, like, really feel for her. And so I feel like naturally we see her going after this man who, like, you know, doesn't swing that way and, like, just trying her best, and we sympathize with it. Whereas in the Kurt thing, the writers were writing it, I don't know if they were, like, intentionally making it creepy, but it was much more comedic than it was earnest.
Certainly.
And we were given a lot of insight into how uncomfortable it made Finn feel. And so even though it's a very similar situation, we are like put off by it because the writers are framing it as an uncomfortable thing. But then I also totally agree. I think part of it is just, you know, homophobia in society and like homophobia in us as viewers, that it just naturally is creepier to us for a gay person to go after a straight person. Whereas like a straight person going after a gay person, like you said, we see that, I mean, not necessarily after a gay person, but we see straight people go after people who aren't interested in them constantly on TV. And it's always like, what a fun plot point.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad we're having this discussion. I think it is definitely worthwhile. And I think it's worthwhile for all of us to, you know, think about our feelings about all this and, you know, only kiss people who want to be kissed by, you know, in like, you know, in their right mind, you know, who are awake. God, my goodness. Elizabeth, thank you so much for this message. Last but certainly not least, we've got a message from Molly.
Hey, Ian and LPC. I just finished listening to your episode on Diva. I completely agree with everything you said. And I just want to add something else that I really loved about this episode. Something I find so special about the Bram-Tana love triangle plot is the way it normalizes and legitimizes Santana and Brittany's queer sexualities. We know Glee, and we know they could have had Sam say something about Brittany needing to be with a man because she's been with a girl for so long, or delegitimize Santana's love for Brittany in any way, but they didn't. They show that Sam loves Brittany, Santana loves Brittany, and Brittany loves both of them, but it makes more sense for her to be with Sam right now. I guess it's a low bar, but the fact that there is no biphobia or elevation of straight relationships over queer relationships in this plotline was really great and felt very validating, especially given the show's record with biphobia and its utter lack of regard for WLW relationships in the past. That's all. Have a lovely day. Go spread some Gleeva. Molly, she, her. Molly, I will not be spreading my diva around. We just talked about consent. And Lauren Michaels, that's what we call the rule of threes. Okay, so.
All right. What the hell? Comedy King. Molly, I love, love, love this message. I think this is such a great point. And Glee has done so many things wrong, many of which we've talked about in this episode alone. But I think, like, this showing that, like, you know, Sam and Brittany's relationship isn't like, you know, Sam isn't saying Brittany needs to be with him because she needs to be with a man. Like, it's just, all of it is legitimate. Like, she was with Santana, now she's with Sam, and that's her love life, and that's okay, and it's not a joke. And I love that, and I love that you brought that up. That is very, very awesome.
You know, it's sad that, like, we have to call it out because it is such, like, front page news, but it's nice when Glee handles things well.
I know, and, you know, and if we're gonna talk about all the bad things, I love to talk about the good things, too. So, no. And this is such a great thing, and I really appreciate it. Appreciate you bringing it up. Let's go spread some Gleeva. Do you want to play the relative pitch game?
Heck yeah, baby. Heck yeah. We got Diva by Beyonce, Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, Nutbush City Limits by Ike and Tina Turner, Make No Mistake, open parentheses, She's Mine, close parentheses, by Barbara Streisand and Kim Carnes, Bring Him Home from Les Mis, Hung Up by Madonna, Girl on Fire by Alicia Keys, I Am Up Farst.
H, yeah. Okay. I want you to sing Don't Stop Me Now.
Oh my gosh, I love this song.
I know you would.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the skies like a tiger defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, go, go. There's no stopping me. I'm burning through the skies, yeah. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light. I wanna make a supersonic man out of you. Okay, so my burning through the sky, yeah, was A sharp to B to A sharp to G sharp to F sharp to D sharp. I was a half step sharp.
Ooh.
I did not think I was going to be sharp on that song because that song is so high.
Yeah.
Shoot. I mean, it's also easier to sing it that high in falsetto, whereas he was doing a little chest voice. All right. I want you to do Girl on Fire. Katniss Everdeen, The Girl on Fire.
I think it's, she is just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly.
So she's just a girl and she's on fire was A to E to C sharp to F sharp, I believe. Yes, that was correct, what I said. That's it. That's it.
Lonely like a highway.
Oh, yeah, baby.
I feel like this song is super iconic. So I would have been disappointed myself if I wouldn't have gotten
it. I mean, so is mine. So
I guess so.
Don't take this away from yourself.
That was fun. Awesome. Great. I love a relative pitch game. I hope other people enjoy listening to it because I love doing it. That's your episode, you guys. Thanks so much. Thanks so much to everyone who sent us messages. Thanks to every Australian who sent us a message about Nutbush City Limits. That's very important to me to know. I now know that information. We shared it. I'm pumped as hell about that. I'm really glad that we can have these conversations with each other. That's doing this is one of my favorite things in the world. And I absolutely love this. And I love that we can have conversations and learn and grow. And I love that. So thank you to everyone, for real.
Love all of you. Thank you for being here. See you Wednesday for I Do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we'll see you then. Here is a mini consensual kiss on your forehead. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.